Stick around until the end of today's episode to hear the trailer for The Athletic's next narrative podcast, The Play Callers, where Jordan Rodrigue will take you inside the dynamics of the NFL's youngest coaching family, the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay coaching tree. The entire series will be released on The Athletic Football Show feed on Monday, July 10th.
How do I sound now? Sound okay?
Would you ask Pop that question?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network. Okay, here we go.
And it is another Hoops Adjacent episode on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here in D.C. It's about to rain a lot, thunderstorming in the Bay. Marcus Thompson.
Actually. Wow. This is a rare time we have similar weather.
Really?
I don't get to brag about my West Coastness.
I know, right?
Yeah,
right?
It's kind of gloomy. Like, it looks like it's about to rain.
Yeah.
It might be a chubby rain.
Chubby. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love that movie so much. I can quote it from memory. Amick, what's the weather like in the 916? What are you doing?
I was going to say, Marcus is only about 90 minutes from me.
That's
but
true.
If you want to get in the car and come up to good old Sacramento, we got some blue sky. A little bit of clouds, but we have the most mild Sacramento summer in recent memory.
Probably beautiful.
It's been amazing. No triple digits.
Right. It usually gets hot up in there, right?
Oh, yeah.
In that Inland Valley
hot
area,
out there,
right?
Yeah. You just walk outside cussing, it'd be so hot.
And normally, here's a quick side story, guys. It normally gets hot enough, or that history is what propelled our family to, after the draft or around the draft, we took a quick 2-day camping getaway, right? And the idea is get out of the triple digits, get up to the mountains, and get out of the heat. Well, the script didn't cooperate. So we left like 75 degrees in Sacramento and decided to go sleep in sleeping bags for two nights in 40-degree Lake Tahoe.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not good.
It did not work. It did not work.
That plan was supposed to change.
Yeah.
Right, right. Always subject to change.
Mother Nature didn't cooperate.
All right, so we're speaking of change, we're at the...
I was about to say, yeah, speaking right? of out in the cold.
It's that time of year. It's my least favorite time of year because I have to talk to agents, which I don't like, but it's okay. It's my job. It's what I have to do. So, the squad in the city that you live in they made some really interesting draft night moves to clear some cap space.
Right.
And so now... I know there's been a lot of talk about what are they going to do with that cap space? They're going to extend Sabonis, which I think they can do later than the fall, if I remember correctly. But what do they do with that cap space, Sam? What's the target?
Sam, remember, he
teams?
Doesn't want you to take his guy, by the way. So be careful.
Who's
how
that?
You answer
Kuzma?
This. Kuzma.
Bye.
He said, bye, Felicia.
No, I love Kuz, but that's not, trust me. That's
that's not where they are.
That's not where they are anymore.
It's not where they are. I'm honestly incredibly curious, guys. I mean, the Sabonis thing, I do think if I'm handicapping it, I think that'll probably happen. And as you know, with the CBA changes, they can go up to 40% now on the veteran extension and renegotiate that. So that money is going to add up now in a way that it wasn't going to previously, but that still leaves a lot of extra money to go around. So, you know, Kuz is a guy that they not only been tied to, like they basically traded for. Like that trade was done with the Lakers.
Yeah.
You know, and now kind of
same group, right? Same GM and everything.
Same GM. You know, they saw him as a fit with these guys. And then, you know, obviously the Lakers pivoted and did the Westbrook deal instead. So they've liked him for a long time. I think they got to be a little bit careful because, you know, like the prospect of an overpay seems like mm-hmm. it might happen here if that's the road they go
and
down.
Those kill you more now, I feel like.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, and it's funny, our buddy John Hollinger did his rankings of all the different free agents. I was looking at his Kuzma breakdown. He's clearly not a big time Kuz guy. And it was like, man, he had him handicapped at like $13.5 million, which I think is probably low. But like,
no, he just walked away from $13 million.
Right. But then you got that. Like people, okay, but people are talking about 30. Like you cannot be giving Kuz $30 million.
I don't know if it's going to get to 30, but certainly he's going to get to John Collins now. Yeah. I can tell you that for a fact. He's getting to John Collins. So
yeah.
That's, you know, which is 25. So,
right,
I mean,
right.
You know, but it's a fair question. It's a fair question. Is 25 an overpay for Kyle Kuzma? I mean, that's a fair question. He was really productive the last year and a half in Washington. Not that anybody noticed because it's Washington, but sure. but he was very productive. But here's the thing. This is what I'm not as sure about him going to SAC as maybe other people are. I know that it's important for Kuz to get paid, but he's going to get paid. But even more important is he wants to go someplace where he can hoop. You know, I can tell you what he does not want to do. He does not want to go back to a team where he's just going to stand in the corner and wait like he had to do in LA. That's not what he's going to want to
don't
do.
Don't you
at
think
all.
He might? He, you know, and again, we don't need to go too far down the Kuz road with the Kings because I don't know if that's one of their targets. But like, he might, if it was SAC, he might be in the corner waiting to shoot. Like,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I'm not sure that this is the perfect fit for him. Now, will they be good? Yes. Will they be? I think he can help them, but I know he doesn't just want to be a stationary guy. He wants to have the ball in his hands. He wants to create off the bounce. He got a lot of freedom to do that in Washington. I mean, a lot of nights because of all the injuries to Beal and Porzingis, he was the number one option.
Right.
You know, and he wouldn't be close to the number one option in SAC. So that's why I'm not quite sure that's as good a fit as other people think it might be. I'm not sure. But if just knowing what's important to him. So
if we're throwing names around, what do you guys think about the Bruce Brown idea? Like, to me,
that would make a lot of sense. Yeah. Bruce Brown would make a lot of sense.
I might want to overpay Bruce, you know, more.
Bruce and bringing back Harrison Barnes. Like, yes. I like that because
wouldn't you rather do that with your $30 million?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you could bring Barnes back. Like, Kuzma would have to be an obvious upgrade over Barnes, right? Because he's going to be more money. Yeah, I like the idea of bringing Barnes back. You might even get Barnes at a nice price to stay.
I was thinking like 20-ish, right, Marcus? Like 20-ish?
Yeah, like he would make 18 last year. Like, I don't think it would be crazy.
But the contract was going down. So, I mean, yeah,
I don't think
it would
be crazy. And add a Bruce Brown, to me, that makes a lot of sense. But you're also seeing, like, I mean, the Hawks gave away John Collins. Like, we're seeing like people terrified of the cap and trying to get below the second apron. Like, already, Sam, you see this already impacted free agency now. Like, it was supposed to be like the anti-Warrior Steve Ballmer thing, but it feels like everybody else is being affected by it, not just Ballmer and Joe Lacob.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point about the domino effect, you know, Kuz was tied to Utah at different times, and now John being there probably takes that one off the board. And yeah, I mean, you're seeing some of these deals. I mean, in DA in your backyard, the Beal deal, it was obviously unique because of the no trade clause, but like still, you know, like the pennies on the dollar transactions that are happening, and then the unintended consequences that end up bleeding into free agency. I think that's going to be a major storyline here.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I'm going to say chilled because that's not quite true, but I think people are being very proactive. You know, they do not want to be anywhere near that second apron. They are terrified of that second apron, you know. So anybody that's close to that, I wonder what Milwaukee's going to do. Like, they got some choices they got to make, you know.
They
like,
do.
You know, what do you pay Chris Middleton? I don't know. Like, I really don't know. Like, if he walked away
especially
from 40.
Especially with Giannis kind of hinging on it, right? Like, Giannis got
right.
me looking at
you know
this,
what I'm
right,
saying?
Sam?
Like, they got some tough.
I think he is. Yeah. That one to me is a little uncomfortable. And by that, I mean, you know, like on the one hand, Chris kind of has him over a barrel because of the CBA framing of it, right? But on the flip side, they're looking at him like, man, you just came off your worst year. Your health continues to be an issue. And, you know, and this is just me kind of reading the room. Like, I don't know if you got some truth serum into Giannis and said, like, is this number, like, the guy that you want to rock with if you had to pick a guy all over the league? Like, I don't think the vibe's exactly the same as it was when they won the title. I think that, you know, but he knows the alternatives.
You're saying it ain't Steph and Draymond?
I do not think it's Steph and Draymond. But I think Giannis is smart enough to know he needs him. And again, because of the way that the sausage gets made in the league, like, you know, he's probably the best option. So yeah, they can't lose him, but if he comes into that boardroom, you know, flexing and saying, I got to get to this number. If I was the Bucks, I'd be pushing back because, you know, it's been a bad stretch for Chris.
I mean, to your point, Marcus, like, doesn't Harrison Barnes do everything that Chris Middleton does? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and probably is going to cost a lot less money. You know, I mean, Chris is still, I think, a good defender, but I don't think he is where he was a couple of years ago just because of the injuries, you know?
Right.
So
100%.
So I think people are going to, and Bruce Brown, same thing, right? Like, I mean, he does a lot of those things that you get from Chris Middleton, like, and won't cost $40 million probably.
It's going to be people lining up to double Bruce Brown's pay and feeling good about it.
I know, right? So there's no chance. There's no chance he goes back to Denver, right? What is it? $7 million they can offer him? $8 million they can offer him? Something crazy.
I just read it the other day. I think it can go a little higher, but man, don't you guys love how you got the books and the economics and the reality that everybody faces when free agency begins. But then you also have, and this is what we all, I think, enjoy coverage-wise, is the human component and the emotional side. So when Bruce wins that title and then they celebrate in that parade, and you guys, I'm sure, saw this, like, you got Bruce kind of trolling the crowd a little bit, saying, should we run it back? And, and he was, like, saying things that you just – in your head, you're kind of going, Bruce, don't do that. Like, that, there's no
that was
way.
That was the Hennessy, man. That was the brown liquor talking.
Right. Listen, I actually, at Calvin Booth, this is in the locker room, champagne's flowing, championship just ended. And when I talked to Calvin and I said, you know, I know your head's not in this space, but any quick thoughts on Bruce Brown possibly coming back? And Calvin kind of smiled. He goes, well, maybe I'll catch him while he's drunk and get him to say yes. You know, like that's the only way, I think, that he's coming back.
Hey, sign this form here to get your championship ring.
Sign this for my niece.
Yeah. This is how you get your championship ring. You just need a signature.
Psych. You know, so, it's going to be tough.
We're back at this point again. And I don't know, I feel a little bit more excited, but Sam, you wrote about this. So he's not a free agent, but this, like, the number one chip is probably Damian Lillard at this point. Is my guy finally going to get up out of here? Should I actually get excited about him possibly going to Philly and winning a title that Iverson never won?
Or is this just another? Wow.
I want Dame in Philly because 2001 needs to be finished, right? like we got to close that circle. Iverson was supposed to get a title, and who better to follow the Iverson mold than Dame going
they
there
love
and delivering
Dame
a title?
They would love Dame
in Philly. Yeah, so should I get excited about this, or is this going to end up the same way it always ends up?
Man, we're going to have to revisit next week to see. I think it's coming to a head one way or the other. It does feel, you know, I'm going to steal this from our colleagues and friends. I was listening to Zach Lowe and Howard Beck get into it the other day. Mm. And the way they put it was, it's not coming to a head just yet. It's like coming to a shoulder, coming to a neck, like we're making our way up the body. It feels more real, in my opinion, than probably ever. You know, they met obviously on Monday. We're recording on Tuesday. And going into that meeting, I did not expect there to be any fireworks that were going to tell us one way or the other. Because really, what I was trying to do when I wrote about it was just kind of reframe the timeline, because it was never the all or nothing draft night experience that it had kind of been made out to be. Damian and his camp had planned on essentially giving the Blazers more time to get into free agency a bit, to keep working the phones. But there was, I will say, like a flashpoint moment that they could have tipped it the other way, where, you know, there was an ESPN report essentially intimating that this was the Blazers team, you know, kind of love it, take it or leave it, and that Dame needed to decide if this is something he wanted to be a part of. That was not the message that he and his people had been getting to that point. So that was a little squirrely moment, I think, where it was kind of like I think partly what prompted the meeting was like, all right, can we get a reconfirmation of the message here? Like, you guys are working the phones for big time moves to become a contender again, right? You're not just doing a Scoot Henderson victory parade with the draft class that you're really excited about and then basically saying, if I want to remain employed here, I can. You know, they needed clarity on what the approach was. And when it was kind of, you know, reconfirmed that they are trying to make some stuff happen, then the runway is a little bit longer. But I don't think it's all that long. I think if we get into early July and there's nothing cooking, then the ball goes back to Dame's court. And I mean, you guys, I think, probably agree with him in particular, because of the history and the roots and the loyalty and all the off-court stuff that he has with Portland. I still have part of me that feels like I'll believe it when I see it, far as him asking out.
Sure.
But sure, I do think, like, at that point, now the whole, everybody in that room is then looking at him and saying, okay, this is what it is. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, Jason Quick wrote a great column today.
He did.
I highly recommend it in The Athletic, about how if Dame wants to, I mean, Dame can, he can stay there, but he's going to have to probably accept that at the end of his career, he's not going to be the man anymore. He's going to be maybe coming off the bench, maybe backing up Scoot Henderson. And if he wants to do that, there's a chance that Portland could put that kind of team together over the next 3 or 4 years. But if he expects to win a championship or contend for a championship and be the man every year, the rest of his career there, that's probably not going to happen, just because they just, it's not possible for them to put a team like that together around him. So it's a fascinating thought piece. And I know, I mean, I think we all agree that, you know, one of the potential avenues that people have been talking about was, well, they can get Draymond Green. Well, they're not getting Draymond Green. I don't think any of us believe they're getting Draymond Green. Draymond Green's going back to the Warriors. If you didn't know it before last week, before they sent Jordan Poole 3,000 miles to the East for Chris Paul, you should know it now. I mean, that's rather clear about the direction that they're going in going forward.
No question. Although, DA, to me, if those are the two alternatives, and I loved Quick's piece, just like you, and again, if we're just handicapping it, like if those are the two alternatives, then to me, it's Dame ends up asking out.
Yeah, I don't know if he has a backup, but it ain't Draymond. It's not going to be Draymond.
But again, that's like, even when I was trying to learn for the story that I wrote, like the only reason I even wrote the Draymond stuff, knowing how implausible it was going to be, was because it shows you where his head's at. And it's like that, okay, give me Draymond, give me OG Anunoby, give me Pascal Siakam. Like, no. You know what I mean? Right. Like, those are not happening. And if that's the kind of stuff that keeps him engaged, keeps him in town, I don't think he'll want to be there. Yeah. And with Quick's piece, it what I, you know, like always with Jason, like, he'll make you think. So at the end of it, you got to decide, like, can you see that vision that he's painting? And I honestly can't. Like, the idea that he'll take the sentimentality route and have the, like, I'll get a chip when I'm 38, and it'll take a while, and it doesn't matter if I'm not the guy. Like, not when you have, like, Marcus, you joked about, not joked, but, like, Philly, Miami. I mean, I think Miami is number one on that list. Like, these are, if you can get that deal done, these are plug and play options where you go, boom, I'm a contender now. And this is, let's do this.
Yeah, especially when they're talking about, yo, man, I know you want Draymond, but we can bring back Alfred Aminu if you want. Like, that's about the best we can do. Who, say Dame's off the table, or we don't know what happens. Maybe free agency needs to shake out first. Who are you looking at as, like, the piece that will unfold a lot of these dominoes? Is it Harden his decision?
Right?
Yeah, Harden. Well, because you got the Houston component is massive. They're sitting there with $60 million plus in cap space. And I think, I'm curious how you guys see it, like, more uncertainty now than there might have been a couple months ago about what direction they're going to go. Mm-hmm. I think they feel pretty good about their draft. You know, they love James Harden. Yes, you know, like we've written, when he left for Brooklyn in that trade, like, literally told him on the way out the door, I'll be back, like he was Arnold or something. And that was the plan. But now, okay, he flamed out a bit in the playoffs.
It's Arnold, by the way.
It's Arnold. Yes, Arnold. Apologies. And, you know, flames out a little bit in the playoffs. How much money does he want? Do they have leverage? Because it did seem for most of this season like he had like some reasons that he wanted to be back in Houston, even beyond basketball. But now, I mean, they can look at a Fred VanVleet. They can look at all these different guys. It doesn't make a lot of sense for them to throw everything at James.
VanVleet makes a lot more sense to me for them, for their timeline also, right? Because what James is, how old is James? 32, 33? Like, he's not a kid. Like, and you know, VanVleet is in his late 20s. I mean, it makes a lot more sense for the group that they're trying to build around.
And he's not only not a kid, DA, not to slander, but it's like, you know, he's not, this is not LeBron.
You're saying that's a rugged 34.
This is not like LeBron in the cryo chamber spending $1.5 million on his body.
Say like Steph waking up at 6 a.m. every morning in off season.
Eating egg whites.
Like the Vegas side trips were still happening with Philly in the playoffs.
Right, exactly.
That's how he's wired.
So I just don't, I'm not sure that may, now look.
I don't know, that's probably why you can trust it, say, DA. You know, the dudes who hit the club and still get it done. Like,
yeah, there's some guy. Hey, Rod Strickland built that way. Rod Strickland was the greatest.
Yeah, but at
greatest
what age,
game
DA?
Day performance after a big night that I ever seen. Like, oh my God. I don't know how he did it. He's amazing. So
I'm just saying Rod Strickland played till he was 38. That's all I'm saying.
Like Rod get 9 assists.
He can get it today.
It's unbelievable what he could do, how he lived off the floor back in the day. But so we got other teams out there, Sam, with room. And Detroit's one that everybody talks about. There's been a lot of discussion about Cam Johnson going there and a couple other people. I wonder whose owner is more impatient? I wonder among these teams that we know have cap space. You got Tom Gores in Detroit. You've got Fertitta in Houston. You've got the DeVos, you know, clan in Orlando. Those teams have all been really bad for a while, and they've tried to build through the draft, and they've not been very successful doing so. But I wonder which one of those owners is most capable and likely to overspend to get somebody, some name in there that will help him or her win games and sell tickets.
So if I got to pick between those three, and admittedly, I don't have a great sense for Tom as a, you know, in terms of the pulse on him right now. Although you don't really have to have a great pulse when you throw $12 million at, you know, or more. Yeah. What was the final number on Monty?
70 some million dollars.
Like that's a good pulse. Yeah. You know,
and he gave Stan 35, nobody was going to give Stan anything close to that. Right. So he doesn't mind spending.
He's thirsty. I mean, I'll probably go with Fertitta though. You know, and part of it is it's the narrative or the storyline where, you know, Tillman really enjoyed, I think, those early years as Rockets owner, where he was in the spotlight. They were trying to take down the giant with the Warriors, you know, in front of him every single year. And, you know, and Houston was one of the places to be. And, you know, I remember like covering those series and even nights where we'd be at the Biggio's bar at the Marriott Hotel by the arena, and Tillman would be kind of out among the people doing his thing. And like, you know how it is when somebody buys a team, they enjoy, especially those early years of like, I'm the guy, this is my team. And then it just, everything changes. James leaves, nobody cares. You know, we've all been through it at different times, but like I've joked with the head of PR for the Rockets, Tracy Hughes, you know, we get along really well. And it's just like when James Harden left, like, oh, I'm sorry, Trace, haven't called in 18 months. You know, like especially national media, you lose connection. And so Tillman is sitting in the middle of all that going, well, shoot, this ain't as much fun, you know, and everything you hear is that he's ready to go and he wants to. You know, Marcus, tell me if you've ever heard this before, like he might have some interest in a two timeline type of thing. Like, give me all of it. Give me the young stars. Give me the old heads to bring this thing up.
That works so well.
It works really well. It's, you know, Warrior Blueprint.
Well, Sam, who do you think?
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Of the teams with cap space, who do you think is more likely to land the surprise free agent? Like, is it Houston with the young talent and, you know, Ime Udoka, right? Does somebody want to go to the Pacers or do somebody like say, hey, Orlando's got the talent? I may not like Orlando, but they could win if you add a piece. They feel like the more ready plug and play. Like, who do you think out of these teams that have cap space and aren't the most desirable destinations, who can land somebody, you think?
Honestly, you know, I think Houston, I mean, Houston, we know the market and the city and the player opinion. I mean, that's one of the short list cities where spend off seasons there. Yeah. I mean, they, you know, I mean, James, not to keep bringing it back to James, but, you know, part of the reason the Rockets have so much confidence is because they've literally watched James practice in their facility last summer. You know, like, that's, he came back and that's how it is. But even guys who didn't own the city like James Harden did, you got all kinds of players who just love the city, love living there. So probably Houston. But I mean, to me, Orlando is, you know, quietly put a nice little thing together.
It's a very interesting group, isn't it?
Yeah. But they're going to be targeted and deliberate with what they do. I think they're throwing money around less than Houston is. I think they have such a decent core that they've got to be careful and make sure everything complements well. But, you know, and Detroit too, man, like, you know, we sometimes sleep on the history of the Pistons because it's in the review a little bit, but, you know, you see that appeal come into play. Jeremy Grant, a couple years ago when he went, like, you know, some of the roots of that organization in the city compelled him. So I could see some of that stuff as well.
Yeah.
But don't they have, like, with the new rules in the second apron, it feels like they need to, like, get it now before these dudes start, before they start having to pay. Like, it seems like the window's shorter. They can't wait 6 years. Like, they're going to have to pay these guys in 3 years. So it feels like that, you know, creates a little bit more urgency, because what's Paolo going to want in 2 years, right? What's Franz going to want? Like, you got to make some decisions on some dudes, right? Like,
and they already got 9 point guards. You know, it's unbelievable how many point guards they got on their roster.
I just wonder how patient they can be. I feel like they might need to cash in now, because I'm with you. I feel like that's a team, if you put like the right player with them, like, they could make a jump in the East. Like, they could, they can win a title, but yeah, the right bet. Yeah.
Well, Marcus, to your point, because I agree with that, you know, on the one hand, I'm saying they got to be deliberate. They also, it's quite a bit different than Houston and Detroit, meaning Like, it's Orlando. You wake up in the morning with a complex, like, our stars are going to want to leave at some point. You know what I mean? Like
it's just like, check the tape.
Right. So, you know, like,
us waking up with our wives early on, like, oh, man, she going to leave me, man. I'm ready to be on point.
She's still here. I can't believe it.
Right. Yeah, no, it's going to be, I mean, I think this is, all of these things being, and then you've got, you know, Boston's not done. You know, they've got to do some more, and they can't do it with Williams. They're going to lose him now. I mean, they right. kind of made their play. So that's a guy. If you talk about a guy that could help a young team, he could help a young team in a big way.
Which one? Grant?
Grant Williams. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it depends on what he's going to ask for money-wise, but just in terms of temperament, being that type of glue guy, that ultimate glue guy, team guy, does all the dirty work, man, he could help a lot of teams. Like, to me, I'd much rather have a guy like him than overspend on some of these other guys that are out there.
What kind of number, though?
Man, that's another shot at Kuz. You hear that?
No,
that's supposed to be a
guy. It's not Kuz. I think Kuz has earned a big payday. Because he can score and he can rebound. I'm just saying, I can understand teams are not going to give him $30-35 million. That's all.
I'm hearing like the all free agency team on this pod is Grant Williams and Harrison Barnes and Bruce Brown. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, guys like that. Yeah.
What kind of number on Grant you think?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it's a good question because you have to kind of.
It's you got to kind of bet on the 10. Cup
with him, right? Like, you got to kind of see him maybe in a different role or in a bigger role than he had in Boston. And you could do that. And if you do that, then who are you comparing him to, right? Like, who's the, you know, it is somebody like Harrison Barnes, right? And Harrison was making 18, 20-ish, you know, in this last deal. So certainly, if I'm Grant Williams, I would go. I ain't giving him more than ten million. Really?
What was he making? Four last year? Five?
Damn, Marcus.
You're not tripling this dude's salary.
Come on, Scrooge McDuck. Damn.
Give me Kuz if I'm paying that much. I'll double his salary. I'll give him eight and a half, nine.
Was he four last year?
He was four. Wow. Wow. No, he needs to get more than that now. Here's the thing I say about Kuz also. Because y'all think I hate him, and I don't. Kuz is a very good end of quarter, end of half, end of game shot maker. He will take it. He is not afraid, and he makes a lot of them.
And, you know, they don't need it anymore because they have another one of those guys now. And Jordan Poole, baby. Right.
Marcus, how much am I going to enjoy the fully realized Jordan Poole experience?
Oh, man, you're going to love it. You are going to love it. JP, what? Without Steph? Oh, let's go.
With no shackles.
Right? Oh, man, this is what he's been waiting for.
My boy just got tell a
him,
purple
I light. Mean, since he's the man now, DA, tell him that, so he has this thing in Warriors press conferences from the beginning, his rookie year, where he would come in the room, Ray Ritter would be telling him, hey, I need you here, I need you there. And he'd always look at Ray and say, 90 seconds.
No, Terry, the security guard. It'd be Terry. Like, Terry, tell him I only got 90 seconds.
90 seconds. Like, JP, like, this is your team now. It's not going to be 90 seconds.
Can't be 90 seconds.
You'd be like, all right, I give you 120. I give you 120 seconds.
I know. We're going to have to work with him on that. I know. He's a little gun shy, but that's okay. That's all right. We'll work with him.
Sam, we'd be remiss without asking you about your beloved Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, there it is.
What in the world are they going to do? It feels like it's question number one, what they do with D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I think so. It's funny, when we were talking about Kuz.
Talk about pay cuts.
I mean, but also talk about life comes at you fast a little bit. If you go to the second round of the playoffs, when he's having his way with the Warriors, you guys remember I talked to him after one of the games and like everything was great. The fit was wonderful. You know, he seemed to have leverage, you know, heading into free agency, and then it all kind of fell off when they faced Denver. But I thought about D'Angelo in the context of a guy like Kuz. Like, one thing I'll say, not to go backwards, but like about Kuz, like, he got an incredible amount of confidence in himself, mm-hmm. seems to have a vision for himself that is greater than what it's been to this point, which I think very well could propel him to even more success. And it, I don't think it's as, you know, no disrespect, but as delusional as somebody like D'Angelo, where that's his flaw. And it kind of reared its head again in the playoffs and really to the point where now with the Lakers, I mean, listen, all I know is that late in the postseason, when I would try to get clarity on, you know, who the Lakers loved and who they maybe didn't love and, you know, in the offseason to come, that it was a lot of very quick answers about Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura, like, oh, they are not going anywhere. Like, yeah. Write it, shout it, scream it, go ahead. That's, right. You know, that memo was sent. And then it would be like, all right, well, what about D'Angelo? And be like, ah, we'll see how that goes. You know?
Suddenly then, hesitation, huh? Yeah.
Well, and then it's like fast forward to that game five loss. I'm sorry, game four. How dare I forget that the Lakers got swept. You know, LeBron kind of sending that message of maybe I'll retire, and only he knows like what his specific objective was of doing that. But at the time, it was like, all right, is he angling because he wants Kyrie? Is it Chris Paul? Or is it maybe like it's like D'Angelo cannot be the guy? Like, that's not what we're doing. And so I don't know if that just means his numbers got to get a lot lower. I think Rob Pelinka probably feels like at the right number, he's a guy that you know, that fits right. to an extent. But how does LeBron feel? You know, assuming he's obviously coming back. I don't know. The rest of it, you know, Austin's restricted. It'll probably cost him a boatload, but I don't think they're going to let him get away, and probably the same with Rui.
Yeah.
That's the problem, right, DA? They don't have many other ways to go, right?
I don't know how do they improve their team, right? If you posit the most optimistic scenario for the Lakers going into next season, which is the team we put together the second half of the season, we got to the Western Conference Finals and we have a shot. Okay, you could think that, right? Like, you could think that. But I think you are running a risk if you think that you don't need to do much of anything to improve the squad. Like, I think they need to add a piece or two. Like, they're not finished yet. And I'm not sure how they add that piece, you know, with the limitations they have cap-wise and tax-wise.
I mean, devil's advocate, kind of just for the conversation, what would you guys say if I countered by saying, all right, but post-trade deadline, they still had this getting to know you period. You know, these pieces are figuring out their roles. And like post-trade deadline, it was really good. And yes. So like the answer to, what if the answer to the question is just more of this, where you get farther away from the dark memories of the first half of the season?
Yeah.
The 2-10 start, Darvin Ham's a second year coach, all those things. I think that to me is where some of the like subtle tension or friction might lie between LeBron and the organization. And I'm not trying to dramatize it, but like, if I feel like there are people in the front office who kind of look at it and they're like, I think we like this. Like, I think more of this evolving, getting more comfortable, you know, maybe we can actually, you know, push Denver next time. And it certainly felt like LeBron was not seeing it the same way.
And LeBron's like, well, push him to what? Game five?
Exactly. Like, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, they got swept. Like, right.
You know what I mean? I do think there's something to that though. I mean, am I crazy for thinking they got together in February?
Right.
And look what they did. Fair. Like, give them an offseason. Give them time. Okay. Yeah, like, now that they know what D'Angelo Russell's weaknesses are, maybe they can better like, kind of acquiesce it. Like, they didn't play Beasley at all, right? Maybe they can figure out a way to get Beasley in there. Like, it just feels like better. I don't know an option better than that, like, that they could go get outside of going to get
maybe
Kyrie.
Maybe not. I just think, I'm not sure I would be that sanguine about, well, if we just run it back, we'll be all right. You know, like, Denver's pretty damn good. Now, if they lose Bruce Brown, they're not quite as good. I grant you that. But
I mean, they might have a ceiling. Sure, I get that. But, man, like, even LeBron has got to remember, like, dude, you guys were terrible. Like, you were awful. And I think,
like, that, not making the play-in awful.
Right.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is LeBron played Like, LeBron can't play any better than he played in the Denver series. He was phenomenal.
Or longer, right?
Yeah. And they got swept. Okay. And it wasn't an especially hard sweep either by the Nuggets. Like, they just said, all right, I guess it's time for us to win this game. And they did four times, you know? So,
yeah, but then Michael Malone trolled him in the parade and he pissed him off. And that's going to be the spark that's going to get him back.
We'll see. That's what's fascinating about free agency, because everybody can view it however they want to view it, and nobody's wrong. So
It's the Lakers, so they might get a minimum guy that, you know.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm not saying you have to break the bank. I'm just saying they may need to add another player or two, another body into that mix.
I'm going with D'Lo figuring it out. The D'Lo revenge series next year against the Nuggets.
Team D'Lo.
I'm with Team Delusion. Let's go, baby. I'm with Team Delusion. I'm with it.
Literally three of the letters in that word are in the
That's hilarious, right? Yeah.
But you know what I'm thinking. All right, Sam, go to your next of 700 podcasts that you have to do now. Because it's
all good, gentlemen. I love coming on with you. I got to say briefly, because I'm self-conscious about it. You know, as fellow fathers, I'm just appreciate y'all not bringing up the shiner in my eye that you know.
I didn't even notice it.
Look at this baby. Don't have sons, Marcus. Don't have sons.
Oh, that's what we doing. We blaming
the
sons.
Don't wrestle with your boys. Hey,
somebody tagged you with the left.
Tell your wife I said, hey.
I don't think Sharon's, you know, dropping elbows on you like this.
She is not, Dad. That's why I have daughters, right?
Like, there you go. Smart man.
You don't get black eyes.
If I had daughters, I'd be robbing banks for a living. I'd be putty in their hands.
So,
Daddy,
can
I have a space shuttle? Yes, dear. Yes, I'll go get you one.
Funny story that y'all appreciate. Just before this podcast, I go pick my daughter up from summer school.
In a game that constantly repeats itself, innovation is everything.
It's all cyclical. Some of the best inventions come out of necessity. Okay, these are the problems. What are those solves?
The NFL is constantly changing. Its coaches are constantly scheming.
I always joke around. I say it's 32 offensive coordinators versus one defensive coordinator every week, because they all watch each other's tapes. They go through the explosive reel. They're like, oh, this looks good. Let's do it.
Sometimes bright minds are in the right place, with the right collaborators at the right time.
Yeah, Cal barking at Matt LaFleur. Cal's getting irritated to the point that he finally gives up, and they find a way to get away from each other until they come back and come up with a solution.
But I'm a glutton for punishment, as some of those guys probably told you along the way.
I'm Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic. I'm the host of a new narrative podcast called The Play Callers, a series about innovation, competition, and sometimes even self-destruction within the NFL's youngest coaching family.
You lose that Super Bowl, you know, the lies that I told myself were, you won't be happy until you win a Super Bowl.
Hear from these coaches like you've never heard them before, with exclusive interviews with head coaches Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, and many more of the brightest minds in football.
That's why when people say, like, I learned someone's offense, are you coaching that somewhere? What are you, the water boy guy who left his yellow book somewhere and now we have all your secret plays? Like, that's not how it works.
My biggest fear, if you talk to me as a 14-year-old, would be the life of an 80s rock star, to achieve success and then be on that downward trend.
The coaches who knew each other the best also became each other's biggest competitors in the race to find new ideas.
Sean and Kyle are so extremely competitive. I feel like it's like they love each other so much that they hate each other.
The entire series will be out on Monday, July 10th, on the Athletic Football Show podcast feed. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.